Okay, boys, let's go. Turn those dials, man. Pump that gas, man.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Welcome to the main event.
Yeah, it is. It's the terrible one. He's back.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Back from the funny farm, man. Back from Juvia.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network.
That's
this is
right.
Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station.
You got that right. Sell Ethel pretty cheap here, too. Yeah. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. No matter where you're at on this continent, here's Terrible Tommy. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. Yeah, we be back from the funny farm. Boy, I got things to tell you that'll make your skin crawl and your head go boom, boom, boom. Yeah. We're at P.O. Box 401. Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And like I said on the intro there, we got the Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and our world-renowned weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard. And when I was over there, just came back yesterday in the Middle East, we brought a whole, we had another shipment. It's following. It'll be back here. We got two or three 18-wheelers coming in from the West Coast here. We got some really exotic shit from ISIS to put in our weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard. You're going to, whoa, wait you come down here and have a few beers and look at this stuff. Well, what is it today? I lost all track of time. It's June the 17th, 2015, and it's Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. Yeah, we dedicate this to David Lane. And it's about noon here. I usually don't tell the time, but it's about noon. I got jet lag, man. Talk about jet lag. Yeah, oh, you can. I'm going to go in reverse and tell you some of the stuff that happened. We got back to the Newark, New Jersey on El Al Airlines, which I must say, those Jews know how to run an airline. It's very efficient, and there wasn't any Negroes around or anything, and they had all young, pretty good-looking women handling the security and stuff like that. And so anyhow, got on a plane from there to go to New Jersey. I mean, not New Jersey, but to Chicago. And they said, oh, well, the weather's bad in Chicago. May have a hurricane or a tornado or something, and we're going to sit here. Well, we were already loaded, so we sat on the tarmac for 2 hours. 2 hours sitting there. Has that ever happened to you? Wow. So we finally got flying back towards Chicago, and we got within a few hundred miles of Chicago, and the pilot says, oh, sorry, Chicago socked in. We got to go to Grand Rapids because we're running out of gas. So we diverted to Grand Rapids, little tiny airport. We sit on the tarmac there for an hour, and finally they decided it'll unload us for a while. So they unloaded the whole plane. We went into this little backwater place, and some of the people had something to eat and drink and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, well, load up, we're going to Chi-Town, man. It's cleared up. So we got back on the plane, and guess what? Well, it's socked in again. You're going to sit in the plane for another hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And finally, after that hour and a half went by, the guy says, hey, Chicago's cleared up, we're going to go on in there. So we flew on into Chicago, and I never saw so goddamn many people in an airport in my life, because all these people had hundreds of planes that had been shut down. They couldn't fly, and people were pissed off, and they couldn't go anywhere, and the whole terminal was full of thousands of people. The crowded and everybody bumping into each other and everybody was pissed off. And then I said, well, I think I'll go over and rent a car, just drive on home, you know, because I had was supposed to go on the railroad, but got there too late and the railroad was shut down. So anyhow, I went, got on a bus, and me and this nigger boy driver, and we went over there to the National Car Rental, and they said, oh, they're all rented out. There ain't a car here. It hasn't been rented out, so I couldn't rent a car, so I ended up taking a bus down to, what did I take down? Oh, yeah, they got a train that goes downtown, so I took that train downtown and ended up in the Greyhound bus station where I stayed up all night, 6 hours in the bus station, half full of Negroes and every other kind of whatever, you know. And then finally at 6 o'clock this morning, I got on a Greyhound and got down here to a town not far from us, and my sweetie pie, she come and got me. I'm telling you, that was a harrowing night for old Terrible Tommy. And that was in this country. That wasn't in Israel. It was right here, man. So anyhow, that's part of the tragedy. But going over there on El Al, we got there okay, everything fine, and got there were 25 people in this motley crew that I was hooked up with, and they were all a bunch of Bible beating Christians, and oh jeez. Within 3 days, I was ready to go mad and grab one of those guns everybody's carrying around on the streets of Jerusalem and shoot myself. But anyhow, they fixed us up there in a hotel, and we got on out there and started touring the whole country. The best part of the whole tour was the touring the Roman ruins and the aqueducts and all the things the great Romans built. Jews didn't build shit, but the Romans did a wonderful job, and it's still a whole lot of it's there. Caesarea, Tiberius, and the big waterfront channel there at Tiberius it was, and all that kind of stuff. Man, it was great, you know. That was worth the whole trip, to see what our fantastic Romans did. What a... You know, I stood there with my hand on one of those Roman columns and the aqueduct, and I said, if there was any time in history I think I'd want to live, it would have been in the Roman Empire, man, when they were kicking Jews' asses there, and these Christians were all crying about how the Jews went up there to Masada on top of this flat-top mountain and fought to the death. I said, well, I guess you can call that your Jew Alamo. I wasn't going to climb up that damn thing. Didn't want to, didn't. And then I didn't want to float around in the Dead Sea either. I want to get you in the mood here, boys. I want to get you in the mood, man. Here we go. I was in Israel. Yeah, baby. Shake it and don't break it. I just couldn't resist. You need this. You boys need this stuff. That's enough of that. But the problem, I don't know if it was a problem or not, I was in Israel for over a week and I never heard that tune once. Mostly I heard American music, and they had on TV. Now they had one channel over there in the hotels. It seemed like all they played was Holocaust stuff. Holocaust movies, Holocaust TV, Holocaust everything. But anyhow, you could get a lot of other stuff, but I want to tell you, they really like to play that stuff. You know, what other people dwells on the alleged agony of the people forever? They wallow in it, self-pity and so forth. But I want to tell you, well, I'll tell you, let's see, I got this map here, and I can sort of tell you a little bit about where we went. We were clear up in Tyre in northern Israel. And we were over in Haifa. And we were down in Atlit and Dor and Caesarea, Apollonia, and Jaffa. And then we cut across and went across the country. It only takes you about an hour and a half to drive clear across the country. We went over to the Sea of Galilee, yeah, which is nothing but a big lake, really. That's where the baby Jesus walked on the water. He did. Now, don't you laugh about that. Yeah, don't you laugh about that. Anyhow, I tried to walk on the water and almost drowned. I said, because the Bible says, if you have a faith of a mustard seed, you can do anything he did. So all these people are jumping off the pier into the water, but they almost drowned. But anyhow, the Sea of Galilee, you know, here's where I experienced my first understanding of how precarious the situation is for the Jews. I mean, really, they got one foot in a grave and one on a banana peel, because a lot of people don't know they get all their water from one source, and that is the Mount Hermon up in the northern part of Israel. You got to understand that the bottom part of Israel is desert. But up there, Mount Hermon has snow, a snowpack, and that snowpack melts, comes down the Jordan River and into this Sea of Galilee, which is nothing but a big lake. I've seen lakes bigger. Oh, it is pretty big. And then that water, believe it or not, is pumped up from that Sea of Galilee 500 feet up a mountain by the gigantic pumps. And then it's, I don't know exactly how they store it or whether they do store it, then it's pumped down into the cities like Jerusalem and so forth. So now imagine if something happens to that pumping station, you'd cut Israel off water immediately. And they don't use nuclear power over there at all. I thought they did, but they don't. They burn dirty old crappy coal that they get. I think I asked him, where in the hell are you getting your coal from? And I think the guy said Australia or some, or no, South Africa. I think they get their coal from South Africa. But anyhow, then that Jordan River keeps on going down all the way to the Dead Sea. That's the one that's full of salt, and you can float around. And I didn't go in it, but the guy who was, I was sharing a room with, an old guy, he was all stoked because he got in that Dead Sea and floated around. He couldn't even turn himself to get his feet so he could stand up. So somebody had to help him. But anyhow, that Dead Sea is no good to anybody. But we stayed up there in, where was it we stayed? Well, it was on the Sea of Galilee there, so that would have been Bethsaida. There's a big hotel there. They had nice hotels, yeah, and stayed there one night. And then we went down, I think it was to, now you got to understand, I'm in this bus with a Jew tour guide and a preacher from not too far from where I'm at here in Indiana. I hope he don't come down here to see me, who thought he was Billy Graham. And he's preaching all the time on the bus. The Jew is trying to explain more secular, you know, where things are at, and also where the mythical sites where everybody's rising from the grave and all that shit and feeding 10,000 people with a hamburger, all that kind of stuff. And they're yapper all day long on that bus. I thought I was going to go crazy. I wanted to jump off the bus and throw myself into the Dead Sea, man. But all these people, these whacked out Christians, they were the ones that were driving me crazy. They're praying all the time and singing all the time, and you know, geez, you couldn't get away from them.
You couldn't get away from them. They're praying for breakfast. They're praying for lunch. They're praying for dinner. They're praying all the time on the bus. Drive me out of my goddamn mind. Anyhow, so I'm trying to remember where the second night. Wait a minute. We stayed over there by Caesarea, I think, the first night, and then over the Sea of Galilee for 2 days there, and then we went on down to Jerusalem. Now, like I told you, this is a very small place, and you should know that by looking on the map. You drive across the thing in about an hour and a half, and probably about 5 hours, you go from the top to the bottom. So here's this little pissy-ass little country that's causing the world and themselves a lot of trouble. Now, on the streets, we spent 2 or 3 days in Jerusalem. There's people walking all around, army guys with M16s, because I stopped and talked to them and asked them what kind of weapons they had. And even the guys dorming at the hotels carry 9mm with two clips on their belt. Everybody, I mean not everybody, but a whole lot of people were armed, and these guns were not on the back where they're pointing up. These were slung so that the barrels come out from under your armpits. They were ready to go. And they got groups of these guys roaming all over. And these are young guys. And let me tell you something. The Ashkenazim, white-skinned Jews, the German Jew-type Jews and that, they're going. They're fading out. That old crew that went down there to Israel after the war. And also remember, there were 3 million Jews in Israel at the end of the Second World War. Already there were 3 million. Now, where did they come from? Well, Hitler got them down there, because that's what the plan was, I think. Anyhow, the people now that are the maximum race of people are these Sephardics, like the fellow that sent me over there or paid my way. He said, did you notice, Tom, the Arabs there in Jerusalem and Israel look the same as the Jews? They look alike. You can't tell the difference. Well, you can't, some of them, because the ultra-Orthodox Jews, they're the whitest bunch of them all, probably because they keep to them totally to themselves and don't mess around with these other Sephardic Jews. And then now you got 120,000 nigger Jews running around. If that wasn't the stupidest mistake they ever made. But anyhow, these guys, you got to watch what you say or talk about, because you can be talking to a Jew or you can be talking to an Arab right there and not know which one. So as I've said before, demographically, Israel is going to turn very dark brown totally in a few decades. It's already gone that way. I saw a very small percentage of light-eyed, light-skinned, even blonde Jews. They used to be a lot of them after World War II, but those Jews from Europe are now getting old and passing away. So anyhow, as I predicted, sooner or later, the dark-skinned people of that whole Mideast area are going to be the same. And then there's going to be no more need for this Israel, which now, what Israel is now, is a giant theme park. They're making millions off these tourists, especially the whacked-out Christians. These Christians are coming in there by the thousands. These tour buses hold about 100 people, maybe not quite that many, but pretty close to it. And they have all these Christian sites where all this stuff was supposed to have happened, which even the Jew tour guide was a little more honest about that. He'd say, well, there's no actual evidence that this ever happened here. But we take it on tradition and like that. Anyhow, the Christians didn't care. They think it all happened no matter what you say. So the Jew was more honest than the Christians. But the whole country is nothing but a giant theme park with thousands of tour buses pulling into these places. Hundreds of people jumping out with their cameras and their Bibles and all that stuff and running all over the place. And I try to, when I get out of the bus, sort of go by myself and get away from these wackos. But when you're on the bus, you can't do much about it. My greatest time was in the areas of the Romans and the Roman aqueduct and the Roman places where they did their sports and all that, because a lot of that is still very much intact. And in Caesarea, where they've got the that whole harbor, still the harbor's there. It was a great place, I'll tell you. If I ever wanted to live, I think I would have liked to have lived in Roman times and been a Roman, with a little money, of course. So anyhow, let's see. I'm going to be remembering, you know, more and more as we go along. Oh yeah, I took one camera, stupid idiot, and it turned out the camera failed on me the first day. Yeah, and I have half a dozen cameras around here, and the one I took went sour. So I had to go around and buy these one-shot deals, you know. Well, you get 27 shots, and then you throw them away. Off, and then I had to go out and haggle with these Jews in their little bazaars and like that. I'm good at haggling. Boy, I haggled them right down and got the price I wanted. Because I learned that from my dad when he used to haggle for livestock, sheep, cows, and stuff like that. But anyhow, there I was. I didn't have a camera, and I was looking around for a better camera, but I had to end up with these, and I didn't get, the first few days, I didn't get any pictures at all. I got a few on my camera. That saved me a little bit, but I don't know. Sometimes you can't win for losing, but I learned something else. Why not do an audio track of all this and on the bus and all the stuff that the tour guide was saying and all the whacked out stuff the Christians were talking about and doing? And I said, that might be pretty good. So I'm not sure how much I've got, but I think I've got maybe 100 hours of, maybe not that much, but a whole lot of this stuff I've recorded, and I'm going to make MP3s off of it, and then maybe CDs, and I'm not even going to edit it, because I make some comments on the side about these wackos. And but of course, I played it straight and cool. I went down when they baptized all these fools in that Jordan River, and that Jordan River didn't look that clean to me, man. So out of 25, I guess there was about 15 put on these smocks and waded out in the Jordan River and got dunked in, and everybody went hallelujah and sung and all that stuff. I'm sitting up there eating an ice cream cone. Well, anyhow, I got all this stuff, I believe, on audio. And I think when I get it all together, you're gonna get a big kick out of it if you want to get a copy, because I'm making these comments once in a while, too, along the way. Anyhow, now of course you and I know that most of this stuff they're yapping about never happened. Or if it happened, they exaggerated. And of course, the whole Jesus thing, throw that out, never happened. There were a lot of people running around, whacked out magicians and all that, acted sort of like a Jesus, but they were just men. They weren't anything with God. And then they're going on and on about this Lazarus and all these people that Jesus brought back to life that were dead and maggots in them and everything. And I think I've got a lot of sores on my cheek inside my mouth because I had to bite my tongue all the time. And I couldn't really tell them who I was. And I couldn't really, because I didn't want everything to go bananas. So I sort of went with the flow, kept my mouth shut about a lot of things. Once in a while, I'd ask a pointed question, one that could not be taken as trying to break up their little fun games. And the tour guide said, Tom Metzger, you ask the most pointed questions. You're a very intelligent man. So that at least one Jew in the world thinks Tom Metzger is an intelligent man. How about that? Yeah, baby. Yeah. Well, let's see. So the big problem one of the biggest problems in Israel is water, not Arabs. No. And you know, even the Jew tour guide agreed with me. I didn't say it on the tour, but he did, that they fight so much in Israel. You don't get half of the information about how they're fighting among themselves. And one of the reasons they fight among themselves is the ultra-Orthodox Jews are given special consideration. They don't serve in the military. They don't pay taxes, and they get welfare. Well, like the tour guy said, he says, I live in an apartment. I had two kids, and across the way, this is almost like the niggers, you know. The ultra-Orthodox Jew across a hall has 10 kids, and most of those ultra-Orthodox have at least 10 kids, and they don't pay taxes. And the rest of the Jews over there are getting really, really pissed off. That's why I say, leave Israel alone. The Arabs, don't try to attack Israel. Just let them be, and they're going to end up killing each other. There'll be civil war or something over there because they can't go on. They can't pay off anything because they're running out of credit, I think, with the U.S. and some of the other countries. But these ultra-Orthodox Jews get all these special deals. But like I say, the whitest people I saw in Israel were among the ultra-Orthodox Jews. And I think a lot of them came out of Russia. So that was an interesting thing. So the first really problem they got, like I said, is water. Anything could happen. And the second thing is demographically, you don't see much white skin anymore. Let me put it that way. And these Sephardics are... And now they're putting the niggers into the military. They brought in 120,000 of those Ethiopian Jews, supposedly. I don't think half of them were Jews. I think they just did it for publicity. And now they're mixing, and now they're going into the army, and that's something that could lead to a disaster also. And so there's two things that could lead to the fall of the Israeli state. Now, for those of you who don't know anything about the topography of Israel, it's very simple. Other than the ancient ruins and all that kind of stuff, and these big walled city like Jerusalem and like that, when you get off the plane and get out there, it looks just like Southern California. Yeah. You know, they got the Mediterranean there, like the Pacific is out there in California. And the plants, the trees, the landscape is almost exactly like Southern California, where I spent 42 years. Now, I was at the Golan Heights, and you've heard a lot about that. And right on the other side is Syria. So on my right is the Golan Heights. We're going down the highway. On my left is a big minefield the Israelis have planted there because they fear that the wackos are coming over the Golan Heights. And ISIS is over there in Syria. So, I mean, they're getting a little nervous over there because if ISIS got a real head of steam, they come right over the top of the Golan Heights and sweep right down into Jerusalem or Tel Aviv or all over the place, you know. And another thing, too, the average Israeli is not that war-prone as everybody would like to think. It's the American Jews that are the hawks. They're hawks in Israel, but the main hawks are in the United States that always want to go to war. I went to a movie. It was a documentary. I had some time. I broke away from the tour after a while for a couple of days. I went on my own. I talked to people in the street. I talked to people in the businesses and like that. I learned a lot. But they... now, what was I saying? Oh, there was this document. There was an artsy theater not far from the hotel. And I walked around for 6 hours inside the walled city, on 3 hours on one day, 3 hours on the next day. And I want to tell you, that's walking inside the walled city of Jerusalem, which houses a section for the Jews, a section for the Arabs, a section for the Christians, and then everybody, and then you got the Western Wall there and everything. And so I was right up there, took pictures of the Western Wall, not much to see, but anyhow, and everybody from all, and all these tour bunches from all over the world, and you hear the tour guides speaking in their language. And one of the funniest things I saw was about 35 or 40 Japanese, and they're out there singing all these Christian songs in Japanese. I've got it on tape someplace. That was really wacky to me. I mean, you know, Japanese got a far better religion with Shintoism than Christianity, but here the Christians coming all the way from Japan. Wow. So anyhow, the documentary. The documentary was based on about six guys that came back from the Six-Day War. Now, remember, and there's one thing I didn't realize, and I don't know why, but the Arabs didn't attack Israel. Israel attacked the Arabs. And the reason they won, obvious, because they had everything already, and they used the German Wehrmacht Nazi tactics. Blitzkrieg. They only had to go, 100 miles. You know, it was a small area to conquer. So they just lined up all their tanks and shit and got all the intelligence information from the United States of what to do and where to go, and they put the pedal to the metal and just went roaring in there. Well, that's why it was a six-day war. I mean, you know, if it had been a big amount of land, it would not have been a six-day. But anyhow, these guys come back from the Six-Day War, and they went to their, what do they call them, kibbutz. You know, that's these little socialist farming communities. There's actually communist, there's socialist. And that's not a bad idea if you run it right, but they're not doing too good. They're sort of failing. But anyhow, they recorded their thoughts on the Six-Day War. And, of course, they couldn't put those thoughts out right after the war, because the country was in going crazy and nationalism was riding high. If they'd have said anything, they'd probably killed them. So now they went to the kibbutz and they brought out all these audio tapes of about six or eight guys of their real feelings about the Six-Day War. They made a documentary out of it, and they brought these veterans back to be there. You see them on the screen. These guys didn't any more want to fight that Six-Day War than you want to than you would. You know, these were young guys. They didn't give a shit about it, and it's just like the guys coming back from Vietnam. They hated it, and even though it was only 6 days long, I mean, they hated it. The one guy lost a buddy over there, and he said on video, he said, "I would not trade one fingernail on my hand for the life of my friend, and I would not trade one fingernail for the destruction of the Western Wall. If they bombed the shit out of it, I wouldn't have cared." And then they went on to talk about all the Arabs and Palestinians they lined up along the highway and murdered and just left them lay. And even the Arabs that threw up their hands and got rid of their weapons, they were told to kill them, and they were killing them in mass. You know, these wonderful Jews that loved the Yahweh, baby, and, you know, they were exterminating as many as they could. So it was a very revealing documentary, and if I find that it's being played here in the United States or I can get it, I'm going to tell you about where to get it, because these guys didn't make the Hawks very happy at all, because they hated the war, and even though it was a very short war, they hated it. So don't take long once people are shooting at you, you know. So anyhow, that's that. And that's the impression I got with most of the people I talked to over there. They didn't say too much, but it was obvious they weren't pro-military. I mean, they may mouth it. They had Israeli flags on every damn place. Everywhere. It's like they're trying to convince themselves to be patriotic, when I don't think they're that patriotic. It's these American hawk Jews that want to do all this fighting and stuff. So anyhow, that's something that's been quite evident. And I'll tell you how I found out, which could have led to my extinction. I thought about how can I cover myself in case somebody's, you know, watching me or following me or they're looking for me. Because I had no idea what the hell the reception would be. I hadn't had any problem getting in, and I hadn't any problem getting on the tour. But I didn't know at any moment the Mossad might grab me or something like that. But anyhow, I was roaming around there, and I bought myself an IDF T-shirt, an Army T-shirt from the IDF. I love the IDF. I figured that would cover my ass if anything would. Nobody would ever think Tom Metzger would put on an IDF T-shirt. And even more than that, I put on a Jerusalem Police Department ball cap, and I was walking around in the walled city of Jerusalem, and nobody else had those T-shirts. I mean, they were for sale, but nobody else wore them. I didn't see any expression of nationalism at all, except for the guys in the Army carrying M16s. I guess that's sort of nationalistic. But anyhow, I'm going through all these sections of the old city, which is pretty big but pretty crowded. And all of a sudden, I didn't realize I was in the Arab section wearing an IDF T-shirt. And these Arabs were looking at me. They didn't say anything, and they didn't make any move, but they were sure giving me the evil eye, I'll tell you that. I'd say that was the craziest thing I ever did. So when I got back to the hotel, I got rid of that shirt because the Jews aren't wearing them. The only people who wear one once in a while, you'd see an American with one on. So that leads me to believe that they're just sort of tired of this war shit, and they just want to be sort of left alone. And that's why Bibi has some problems in this last election, because the left is pushing strong to go against this warfare and all that kind of stuff. So anyhow, I could have ended up with a knife in my gut in the middle of the Arab section, and wouldn't that be a Donnybrook, Tom Metzger got assassinated by the Arabs, when I would have probably said, hey, I gave a couple of them a thumbs up, you know, when I was going through. Strangest place over there is Bethlehem. That's controlled by Hamas, and technically you got to have a passport to get in to it. But evidently they don't require it all the time. So when we went in there, and it's a very occupied place, and here you got the Christian Jews, no, the Christian Arabs and Jews, and everybody all pushed into this one place. But I talked to a few people over there on the street, and they seem to get along pretty good there. But that's only a temporary situation. It could change at any time. The Jews might demand to get it back, and all hell will break loose. But there was pro-Palestinian, graffiti all over the walls and all that kind of stuff. And the Jews couldn't do anything about it because the mandate is controlled by Hamas and the Palestinian government. But it's just a little place. I mean, you know, this is a little country with all these factional little deals and little towns that are, I'll tell you, it's something else. It's a strange, strange place. It is a strange place. And I asked the tour guide, I gave him a list of the different Jewish things, like the ultra-Orthodox and the Reform and the Secular and the like that. And I also put on their Jew atheists, which I know there's plenty of Jew atheists around, especially the United States, but I know they're in Israel too. So he started explaining to these mostly dumbass Christians about all the differences between them, which I know, and then he got down to the Jewish atheists, and he really had a problem with that. He didn't really want to talk about that. He said, well, we don't recognize that. There are not many of those around. Every once in a while, I'd ask him a question where this Jew tour guide just didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want to talk about the fact that I said, well, how come you got no nuclear power here? You'd think with all those nukes you got, bombs you got, you could have nuclear power. He didn't want to talk about that either. No, so He didn't just out and out refuse to answer the question. He just sort of say, well, I'll get into that later, but he never did. In the Jerusalem walled city with these different sections, with the Arabs in one section, and I told you I had an IDF t-shirt, and I was walking. They were going to have the noon prayers, and they were calling all of them, the Arabs, to come into one spot, and I was stupidly following the crowd, and I almost ended up in there. I'm telling you, there must be somebody watching over me, I'm telling you, because the things I do, it's a wonder I don't get killed. But anyhow, A cop saw me, and he said, no, you know, go. The Jew cop said, you don't go in there, don't go, turn around, go the other way. That was funny, but sort of, if I'd have got in there, they probably would have got me. Oh, yeah, I forgot about, there was another section in this Jerusalem walled city, and that was the Armenian quarter. So you got the Jew quarter, the city of David over there. They got there's a Christian section, but it's not really, I'm not quite sure. I didn't go there, because I figured what they'd be doing. And then there's the Muslim quarter and the Jewish quarter. Here's the Christian quarter. I ended up, I think it was day before yesterday, which anyhow was on Saturday. And I got into the Jewish section. Now, there was nothing going on, of course. They don't do anything from Friday through Saturday. And so almost everybody was sealed into their houses, and the streets in the Jewish section were almost totally vacant. Once in a while, a couple of kids would be playing. So I walked all through there, too. But it was sort of weird, you know, and nobody around. I mean, they just stay in their house and eat matzo balls, I guess. If you ever go over to this crazy place, you got to be prepared to walk, because if you're going to see anything, and you need to learn to walk. And I walked for miles and miles and miles and miles. Like I say, one day I was 3 hours walking inside that Jerusalem, and the next day 3 hours. And then I was walking outside and walking all the way to the hotel. It was a mile at least from the walled city to my hotel. And so I got my walking in. I did more walking than any of those people on the tour. They just mostly sit on buses, and they did some walking, but not like I did. Because I wanted to find out more stuff about the place. And the only way you can find out is to get away from the wackos. I'll stop there for today, and I'm going to start trying to record off what I recorded on the trip. That's going to take a few days, and I'll probably think of a lot more stuff to talk about on another show. But anyhow, Tommy went to Israel. He was challenged, and I took the bet. I've got to say that they must not figure I'm too dangerous, because I had no problem whatsoever with immigration, either in Israel or the United States. They were very kind to me, very polite to me, never gave me any, I didn't have any kind of a problem. And so I've got to say, it was a clean trip, and I don't think I ever want to go back, but except maybe more of a secular tour, but I wouldn't spend that kind of money like this fellow I know spent the money. I wouldn't spend that much money to go over there. I can think of a lot of places I'd rather go. Anyhow, okay, that's it for now, and let's see what else we got to talk about. Oh, I want to read you an article. You know, people have it in their brain that everybody's solidly together in Israel. That's not true. They fight like hell against each other. And Haaretz newspaper, and there's other newspapers, and I read them on the Internet a lot, they criticize the government, really. They go after the government in Israel. And I'm going to read you an article. Just remember, this Haaretz newspaper is one of maybe the largest newspaper in Israel. And right on this main page here, right on the editorial page, the headlines is Gaza's Indispensable or Dispensable Beach Children. Remember a few months ago when that Hamas-Israel struggle was going on, and there was four or five kids playing down on the beach, and the IDF soldiers just blew them away. That was even on American news. Well, listen to this. This is an eyewitness description of the Guardian's correspondent in Israel, Peter Beaumont, who was sitting that terrible afternoon on the terrace of the Al Dira Hotel, regularly used by journalists. When the explosion occurred, as the smoke from the explosion thinned, four figures could be seen running, ragged silhouettes, legs pumping furiously along the wall. Even from a distance of 200 meters, it was obvious that the three of them were children. Jumping off the harbor wall, they turned onto the beach, attempting to cross the short distance to the safety of the Al Dira Hotel, base for many of the journalists covering the Gaza conflict. They waved and shouted at the watching journalists as they passed, a little collection of brightly colored beach tents used by bathers in peacetime. It was there that the second shell hit the beach. Those fired, apparently adjusting their fire to target the fleeing survivors. As it exploded, journalists standing by the terrace wall shouted, quote, "They are only children," unquote. In the space of 40 seconds, four boys who had been playing hide-and-seek among the fishermen's shacks on the wall were dead, unquote. They were 9 and 11 years old, Ishmael and Ahed and Zachariah and Mohammed, all members of the Bakar family. Three others were seriously injured, two of them children. They were younger than the three Yeshiva boys killed in the West Bank for whom Israel attacked Gaza. They were four skinny children of the fishermen, the beach boys of Gaza, wearing shorts, looking even younger than their years. At the funeral of Zachariah's mother, could not kiss his face because his face was torn to pieces. The spokesman of the most moral army in the world expressed his regret. Little sarcasm there. While blaming Hamas, of course, for killing the children, for cynical use of them. Hamas, after all, had sent them to play on the beach. The pilot or the soldier who pressed the button and fired the firing was apparently from the air is absolved of all responsibility. 5 months went by. The Israeli Defense Forces military advocate general ordered a criminal investigation launched. Quote, "There is a reasonable foundation to suspect that the attack was conducted not in accordance with even for negligence it was so proper. It was so proper that it makes one weep. That's how the IDF soldiers should act in the future as well. In other words, good for the IDF, good for the killers of those children. They acted just like they were required to, the pride of the people. The IDF should have been the first to press for a true investigation, especially of this case, which reverberated throughout the world and damaged Israelis. Israel is much more than all the articles of the leftists. Israel should have held up the investigation like a banner. One would prove that there was no need for the Hague or some other Goldstone Commission. But it turns out that the IDF acted as it always does. Even this investigation led where all investigations of war crimes lead, to the garbage can and to the foregone acquittals without trials of the killers of these killed children. The IDF cannot and does not want to investigate itself. It has no interest in its soldiers following the law, except in the cases where a non-kosher sandwich is eaten on the basis of a soldier appears in uniform on TV show. Israel, which has the means of identifying the color of the underwear of assassinated individuals, claims that the IDF did not realize that the figures on the beach were children. Last week, Israel celebrated another PR coup under the pressure by the power that protects it. Once again, the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon gave in and on including Israel on its blacklist of countries that methodically and continually harm children. Israel harm children? No way, not including the 500 children that it killed in Operation Protective Edge, and of course not including the blood of Zachariah, Ishmael, and Mohammed and Ahid, who were killed according to the rules and whose blood now once again cries out from the Gaza sand. Well, I don't think that's too pro-Israel, is it? And that's in the main Israel paper. But as I remember, they didn't go on much about it in this country. There was an initial CNN report, I think. I think it lasted a couple of days, and then they hushed it up. Anyhow, that's the way it goes. And so there is opposition, a lot of opposition in Israel. Not enough, but there is opposition to their... And this is the same thing the American military, the U.S. military does the same thing. They blow away kids and people and everything in all these countries we're occupying. Yes, they do, Mr. Right-wing asshole, Mr. Conservative neocon. They do, and they get away with it. And, of course, the whole war, you know, the whole Iraq war, you know, we killed hundreds of thousands of people. Military is so strong because there is a large number of people that will always back the military no matter what. No matter how evil they do, how much evil they do, they'll always support the military. And look at all these guys running for president. All the Republicans are totally for more spending on the military, more arms, more occupation. And the, whoever does that the most is probably going to become the next president. Even Miss Clinton is going to be saying things like that. They're afraid to go against the military-industrial complex. And unless we do go against the military-industrial complex and cut that war budget way down, it's going to continue. We're going to continue to be living in a military police state. That's what it is. And if you resist in any way, they can come down on you with a pile of rocks. And you don't think that's true, well, you'll see it's coming. It's, the police state is forming. They've got all the power. They've done away with the Posse Comitatus. They've done away with your other protections under the Constitution. And they can come at you anytime they want. They could be coming in my door anytime they want. And you don't have to be guilty of anything. They'll figure it out. Somebody will just hand them a paper and they'll fill in whatever they want to fill in, and away you go. So if you're out there still supporting this conservative, predatory capitalist stuff and the whacked out churches and all that kind of stuff, incidentally, they're the biggest warmongers around as far as I'm concerned. I heard side talk from these Christians on the tour, and they were talking like, it's okay to wipe out the Arabs and all that kind of stuff. And they're such hypocrites. The biggest thing I hate about these Christians is their goddamn hypocrisy. But while they're together on some tour like that, they act so syrupy sweet, and we love the Lord, and we love each other, and we got to love everybody. And the minute they get home, they're wanting to kick their neighbor's ass. Well, I'm glad to be back, and that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on my usual perch here, and I hope you enjoy the show, and I'm going to have more on this stuff as time goes on, but I'm glad I went, but I sure as hell glad I got back. I don't know whether I said this, but but let me tell you, Israel food sucks. It's bland, it's not very highly seasoned. Once in a while you'll get something that's highly seasoned. But, for instance, I ordered half a pizza inside the walled city in this little Jew restaurant. It was the crummiest thing, you know, without beef and without bacon, without pork and stuff like that. It's no fun to eat. You know, even in the nice big hotels, to me, the food was shitty, so I just ate fruit and vegetables, fresh vegetables and fresh fruit, and I did well. But the other stuff they make over there, man, they can keep it.
As as you can plainly see. At night when he's asleep, into his tent he'll creep, and the stars that shine above will light their way to love. He rules this land with sheep, the sheik of Araby.
Sure, you younger guys and gals don't remember that, because that was Spike Jones, who was a big funny man back in the 40s and 50s, and he was the forerunner to a lot of the up-to-date modern comedy. What's his name? He was the Weird Al Yankovic of the 40s and 50s, and I think Weird Al Yankovic got a lot of his stuff because it's so similar, it's unbelievable. See you tomorrow.